Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How are 1 million homeless Haitians coping with the aftermath of the 2010 earthquake? A year after the most devastating natural disaster in Haiti's history, Port-au-Prince and surrounding areas are covered with festering tent camps and open sewers. The misery of residents is compounded by hunger, disease, and the ever-present threat of gangs of rapists who move through the makeshift corridors between the plastic shelters, victimizing women and children with impunity. Mac McClelland is a journalist with Mother Jones magazine who has spent significant time in Haiti over the past several months. She writes about its seemingly intractable sexual assault problem in an article for the January-February issue called Aftershocks. Mac, welcome back to Think.
Thanks for having me.
Haiti had a huge problem with rape even before the earthquake, and amazingly, it's a crime that seems to rarely be prosecuted. What accounts for that?
There just hasn't been a lot of impetus or a lot of infrastructure for prosecuting rape. It's not, for one thing, it has been used by people who were in power as a tool of oppression and terror. So when you have cops and paramilitaries and soldiers, you know, doing all of this raping on the behalf of the government, then obviously there's not a lot in place to prosecute them. And so it sort of has evolved into this very serious kind of cultural problem. In addition, you also have, you know, a long history of not a lot of, you know, women's rights movements and not a lot of education around sexual assault and things like that. So all those things together just lead to a culture that was already in place of a lot of sexual violence. And so now that you have 1 million people who are hungry and they are hot, like unbearably hot under these plastic tents in these tent cities, they don't have jobs, they're desperate. You know, there is a lot of violence. And where there's a lot of violence in this particular case, there is a lot of sexual violence.
And there's also a sense that it's somehow seen as less of a tragedy if a sexually experienced woman is raped than if a virgin is raped.
Yeah, that was the experience that I had. I was with a recent rape victim, and we were taking her to the hospital, and the doctor was telling her basically that she had what was coming to her because she wasn't a virgin. She already had children. And she also was saying that this girl was kind of a party girl, you know, whether or not any of that was true, was saying that this girl was a party girl and this is what she gets and this was going to keep happening. And what did she expect? And, you know, this doctor turned to me and was like, do you understand that this is not one of those cases where an innocent girl has been raped? And I was like, no, I can't. I can't believe that a surgeon was telling this girl, this 24-year-old girl and her mother, that basically it was her fault.
Now, obviously, now there are hundreds of thousands of women and their children living without the ability to even lock a door at night. Can you talk a little bit more about the condition of those tent cities?
Yeah, actually having a door, even, you know, lock or no lock, would be a massive improvement. There, you know, we call them tent cities sort of as a shorthand, but tent is greatly overstating what these structures are like. Yeah. They are not tents. They are literally plastic sheets. So you string some, you know, some wood together, some sticks together, and then you drape some USAID or, you know, China has also delivered a lot of these tarps, and people stamp them with where they come from so you can see what country has given people these pieces of plastic, which is bizarre. So they're just, you know, side by side by side. There's no space in between them. And then there are just narrow rows, very narrow rows, probably like a foot and a half wide in some places, to get between the rows of these quote unquote tents. And in the, you know, in the biggest camp, there's 55,000 people in a pretty small space, just packed into that. They, you know, you see these up on the hills, you see them in every single spare patch of land, in parking lots, in alleys, in spaces in between other houses. There are so many displaced and homeless people that pretty much any place where you could string a tarp up, people have, and that's where they live.
And you write about one case where, and I guess this is not that uncommon, where this sort of gang of thugs is essentially trying to displace someone from this horrible, meager shelter, and the person has really no choice but to acquiesce.
Well, yeah, because even though this is pretty much the most miserable living condition that you could imagine, there still is not enough space for it to happen. What's been happening recently is that a lot of landowners are trying to throw these people off of their property. You know, they don't want them there anymore. If you owned this parking lot or whatever, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want a whole bunch of homeless people living on it. And so what people have been doing is hiring thugs, basically, to come in and tear down these tent establishments and throw the people out. And they call it forced eviction. So a lot of people are being evicted from these tiny spaces. So with that going on, people who have an established space who aren't being forced from it, that is now sort of, you know, alarmingly valuable property. Mm-hmm. And so there was a case where this guy and his family were living under one of these tarps, and some people came in and they were like, "We're going to live here. You're going to move your family out of here, or we're going to burn everything that you have."
Hmm. And at one point you asked, like, where are the cops? Where are the international peacekeeping troops? And you got a really chilling answer.
Yeah. They said they were at my hotel. They, you know, the hotel that I was staying at, And most of the hotels there actually are pretty well protected and well secured because they have Westerners in them or, you know, wealthy Haitians in them. And there are, in at least one of the camps, there are some soldiers. There's a presence of MINUSTAH. MINUSTAH is the United States Stabilization Mission that's mm-hmm. been in Haiti for a while. They've upped it, you know, since the earthquake. And you see MINUSTAH soldiers everywhere, just everywhere, driving around the streets, but you do not see them in the camps. In the camp that I was in that actually does have MINUSTAH soldiers in it, they kind of stay in one place. And so they're not actually patrolling or looking for, you know, trouble or things that they could help mitigate, or, you know, so they're not really crime stoppers. They're just kind of sitting there. Mm. And the other problem with that is that they don't speak Creole. You know, UN soldiers are not, they're not Haitian. A lot of them are South American or they're African. A lot of them are French. So, and they don't have translators. So in the case of this guy who was going to be evicted by these thugs from his tent, he was looking for those soldiers. First of all, he couldn't find them. Second of all, when he did find them, he was not going to be able to explain what was going on because they did not speak the same language that he did.
Hmm. You don't go into this in great detail in the piece, but I wonder if you can talk about, you know, with that many people living so close to one another and it's hot and, I mean, the lack of privacy. I think about, you know, you go camping somewhere and all night long you hear people in a camp, in a tent, you know, 100 yards away. What's it like there at night?
It's pretty loud for a little bit right when the sun goes down, which is, you can hear, there's just sort of like a steady, you know, thrum. Mm-hmm. It's like a buzz almost just from all the people being around and in such a tight space. And you're right, there is no privacy. You have to bathe in the street. So you can see people, you know, bathing sort of on the edges of the camps mm-hmm. everywhere. Just driving around Port-au-Prince, you will see people taking baths on the side of the street next to these camp establishments. So the noise, though, it actually dies down pretty early. I think usually by like 8 or 9, it starts, even though that's, you know, pretty early, even on a Friday night, it starts to get a lot more quiet because they have to go to bed very, very early because the sun comes up early and it is so hot. It gets so hot under that plastic. I mean, you know, it's Haiti. It's like 100 degrees that you have to get out pretty much as soon as the sun comes up because, you know, you could suffocate.
Hmm. And so then people get out. They leave all their things there. And during the night, you visited one family who they kept their little shelter, if you can call it that, as clean as they possibly could. But at night, the woman and the 10-year-old daughter would urinate and defecate in a bucket because it wasn't safe for them to even leave their tent.
Yeah, there are not. Well, first of all, there are not that many toilets. Mm-hmm. For these people. I mean, there are some camps that have several thousand people and they have 6 toilets that were erected by NGOs or, you know, some aid organization or other. And not only is there not enough, but there's also the conditions of these toilets are, you know, you wouldn't want to use them even if it was safe to use them.
Yeah.
And even nobody's maintaining them. So, and there's so many people. I mean, it's horrifying. So yes, this woman and her 10-year-old daughter And a lot of people just use a bucket in their house and keep it in their house, which, you know, as you know, is, I mean, it's hot, so it stinks. But in, even when you empty it as often as you can, you still can't get rid of the smell, really. And because you're just emptying them, you know, outside, then the whole camp can sort of take on this intense, you know, raw sewage smell in some places. But yeah, a lot of women who do try to use the toilets find themselves assaulted on their way there. It's totally dark. Mm-hmm. There are no lights. You just pick your way through the tarps until you get there. You're by yourself. I mean, anybody sees you, they can grab you and sort of drag you into a dark corner.
Journalist Mac McClelland is my guest. She writes for Mother Jones magazine, and her article in the January-February issue is called Aftershocks. We'll be back to our discussion with Mac in a couple of minutes and invite you to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. I am joined now by Justin Martin. Good afternoon, Justin. And
hello, Chris.
We want to tell you about a really exciting, we have a challenge grant going for the 2 hours of Think today. The Wells Fargo Foundation has offered KERA an additional $1,000 gift if we can achieve 75 contributions in any amount during the 2 hours of Think today. So if you've been waiting to make your gift of support to KERA by going to kera.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931, now would be the time. You can think about whatever your contribution is going that much further, because hopefully we can get this $1,000 from the Wells Fargo Foundation.
1-888-694-6931 is the number to call, or you can go online to kera.org. Contribute at whatever level you can afford. It goes directly to paying for the programming here on KERA. Whether it's Think with Chris Boyd and the topic at hand today, which is very compelling, or This American Life, All Things Considered, it goes to supporting the programs here in North Texas Public Broadcasting. 1-888-694-6931. Or KERA.org.
Lots of you have been coming through during this fundraising campaign, and today we want to thank Luke Bailey in Plano. Thank you to Matt Jones in Dallas and Marion LaFeld in Dallas, also Stark Mugabe in Wiley and Luke Bailey in Plano.
Merla Pittman in Denton, Karen and Paul Landman in Allen, Diane Geiger in Terrell, James and Delphine Karub in Montana, I think, which is fantastic, and Hamid Abadan in Allen.
Your contribution makes a big difference to the station. You hear us raising money, and then the rest of the year you hear exactly how your money is spent. We are as careful as we can possibly be with the dollars that we raise from you, because we're contributors to the station as well. Most of us who work here are members too, and we also have a vested interest in ensuring that the money we donate back to the station that employs us is spent wisely. We would love for you to join us right now by calling 1-888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. Public radio serves you every single day. We are delighted to be able to do it. It's all made possible. I mean, money makes the world go round in some ways, and this is made possible by the support of people who believe public radio should exist in North Texas.
For about 37 years, KERA has been here broadcasting with some of the best programming in the North Texas area. As Chris was saying, we're very dedicated to what we do here. We believe in the message, and you can help support public broadcasting by calling 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org.
You have enough time if you start right this minute to either complete an online contribution or even to go on the phone at 1-888-694-6931. You'll be able to be finished with that transaction before we come back with Mac McClelland in about 2.5 minutes. It's a quick, easy process, but it really makes a huge difference to us, not just today, but throughout the year. So join folks like Janet Pivier in Highland Village and Charles Kuiper in Dallas, Charles Mullins in Dallas, Austin Riefenstahl in Grapevine, and Brian Levin in Dallas. Go online to kera.org or call us at 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Mac McClellan. She is human rights reporter for Mother Jones magazine and wrote the cover story called Aftershocks for the January-February issue. If you'd like to join us, ask a question about the state of Haiti today, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-933-5372. You can also communicate via email to think@kera.org. You are in Haiti this week. Is that right, Mac?
I actually just got back.
You got back. Okay. How interested are people who are living in these horrible conditions in the ongoing political contest?
Very interested. It decides everything, pretty much. A lot of people are saying that, you know, you can't really start rebuilding until you have a new government in power, a real government in power, you know, in November. They had the first round of elections, and the government announced that the current president's, you know, candidate basically was in the runoff, and the streets just erupted in violence. Nobody likes that guy. Nobody mm-hmm. believes that he really, you know, should be in the top two. So the Organization of American States, which is an international panel, has come in. And they have recommended, after looking at all of the allegations of fraud, that the Haitian government admit that that guy should not be in the race and put what is sort of agreed to be everyone's favorite candidate back in. And President Preval is so far implying that he's not prepared to do that. So things are actually pretty tense. I mean, I was there for the last 2 weeks, and local business owners and people who we knew who worked there were all very on edge waiting for news, because they knew that if Preval announced that he was going to ignore the recommendations of this international panel, there were going to be widespread riots and chaos for who knew how long.
You found as you traveled around that people are tired of talking to journalists, to white reporters, I guess in some cases to even white aid workers. They're tired of hearing promises that they don't feel like ever get kept.
Sure, you can imagine you have 10,000 NGOs. You have more mm-hmm. NGOs in that country per capita than in any other country in the world. And it, look what it still looks like. Yeah. So you can imagine that if you had that many people around and that much money, you know, everybody knows that a ton of money was pledged to that country, both by private citizens around the world and by world governments. A lot of it has indeed arrived. A lot of it has indeed gone toward programs, but still they're not feeling that. Most people are not feeling that on their most basic needs. You know, they need food, for example. They're not allowed to get comprehensive food aid anymore. So people are hungry. All they get now is water and, you know, some sanitation services. So they're incredibly frustrated. They need to get out of those tents. You know, everybody needs to get out of the camps. And until there is a real functioning government in power, the rebuilding that is going to let that happen isn't going to happen.
Why did Preval ask that food aid be ceased?
Well, he said that it was bad for local food economies, which is, there's definitely an argument to be made for that. You know, the United States has been sending subsidized rice. Former President Clinton actually instituted this policy that would benefit American rice farmers, that we would send all the subsidized rice to Haiti, and we just flooded the market with cheap rice, so cheap that it basically put all Haitian rice farmers out of business. So there are a lot of problems with just flooding a country with free food. You know, it's not good for the agricultural sector. So I think it was in March. It was pretty soon, actually, mm-hmm. after the earthquake that Preval said, you know, you can't do that anymore, which, you know, while it makes sense in the long term, for sure, a lot of people are definitely feeling that in the short term on the ground.
So with no buildings, no homes in many parts of Haiti, I mean, what are people doing to earn income?
Well, when I was there, you sort of have to make your own way, mm-hmm. right? So there's a lot of people are saying, you know, I used to have a job. I had, you know, gainful employment. I had income. I didn't have these sorts of problems. So now they're trying to adapt in any way that they can. In the tent cities, you will see sort of very, very small scale home businesses, kind mm-hmm. of. So you have your plastic tarp up, and maybe you get a loan out from the bank so that you can buy 15 bottles of shampoo, and you can become, you know, a shampoo vendor. You can start like a very, very tiny little store. Obviously, that is not an especially lucrative form of business, but it is something that a lot of people are doing. Also, you could sell hot dogs, you know, you could sell water, things like that. So there are a lot of very, very small business ventures. The most interesting one that I saw the last time that I was there, actually, a couple days ago, when I was on my way to one of the mass gravesite ceremonies to commemorate the earthquake, we saw that there's a movie theater in one of the cities. And when we walked into this establishment, this camp has, I think it has 6,000 people in it. And there are actually three movie theaters. And by movie theaters, I mean, you know, it's still a tarp, you know, under a tarp, but it's a slightly bigger tarp. And they have built some sort of rudimentary wooden benches inside, and they steal power from outside. They run, you know, they run power into, because there's no power in these establishments. They steal power and run electrical cords, and they had a tiny TV that they put at the front of the room. And for about the equivalent of 25 cents on Saturday nights, they showed porn. So, and then on school nights, they showed Arnold Schwarzenegger movies or movies with ninjas in them or local Haitian films. And those only cost half as much as the porn. So, and I talked to this guy, I was like, how's your living? And he was like, well, you know, it's a little bit of money, but it's still a couple dollars a day. So it's not enough. It's still below the minimum wage. And you can imagine the minimum wage in Haiti is lower than anyone could actually live on anyway.
Yeah. So what about other parts of the country that weren't damaged by the earthquake? Are they prepared to receive refugees? Do they want everyone to stay as far away as possible?
A lot of them have been receiving refugees, actually. There are many Western NGOs and working in the rural areas because the rural areas of Haiti, even, you know, you sort of in Port-au-Prince, you have the crush of too many people and, you know, this overpopulation. But in fact, some of the rural areas are even poorer than that, you know, already very intense poverty. So those areas were not really equipped. They didn't really have the resources to take on extra population, but they did. They have been. They've been absorbing families into their own families. You know, aunts and uncles and cousins have all been moving in together. So a lot of NGOs are working in those rural areas to try to supplement the resources of the people who live out there. And in fact, the government would like more people to live out there. Having so many people in Port-au-Prince is just not sustainable. I mean, it is sort of, it's too tense for one thing. You know, you just have like too much going on. But also, in order to do all the eventual rebuilding and reconstruction, they need to clear some of those people who are, you know, squatting in all these spaces. So the government is trying to encourage NGOs to do more programs outside of Port-au-Prince in the undamaged areas to get people from Port-au-Prince out of there.
You do write about one effort to move people, and there was a huge migration, and it's like a for-profit enterprise, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense in this case. Can you tell us about that situation?
Yeah, one of the, this is also part of the decentralization plan to get people out of Port-au-Prince. It's about 10 miles outside Port-au-Prince. There is a settlement called Carai Cesslas, and it looks exactly, literally, it looks exactly like District 9. That is the best. One of my, one of our readers pointed that out to me because I was sending pictures of these tents in rows, you know, these perfect domed white tents, like tiny little tents on white gravel. And I was sending pictures from it. And one of our readers was like, that looks exactly like the set of District 9. And it does exactly. So that's where they moved a lot of people out to. 10 miles outside the city, you can imagine there are even fewer jobs than inside the city. It's in the middle of no place, just absolutely middle of no place. And that land was chosen by a guy who was appointed to the Haitian government, or appointed by the Haitian government to pick a relocation spot. Coincidentally, he is also the president of this giant company that owns that land, and the government is going to pay, you know, whoever is the landowner, which happens to be this guy's company, in order to take these people and let them use the space. And now they're sort of building an industrial park. There's going to be factories. You know, all these people are jobless mm-hmm. and sort of hopeless. So now they're building factories. They're bringing South Korean investors in to build factories that, you know, the people who live in Korae Seslis are excited about the prospect of any job, although they recognize that the labor conditions might leave a lot to be desired. And that's a lot of activists in Haiti now are worried about the conditions that they're going to set up in these particular factories because there's not any infrastructure in place to keep an eye on them.
What's happening to the kids these days? Is anybody going to school?
There are schools. A lot of people can't afford to go to school, you know, is one of the problems. You can't pay the fees. Mm-hmm. And if you can't pay the fees, then you can't go. So one of the women that I met who was in one of the rural areas, actually, she was working for Mercy Corps, which is a big, you know, American NGO. And she was doing their Cash for Work program. And Cash for Work is sort of you get hired for 15 days by some aid organization. You do whatever the project is. In this case, it was, you know, sort of clearing space for a road. And so then you have a job for 15 days. And so she was saying that with this 15 days worth of work, she was going to be able to send some of her kids, although not all of her kids, to school. So the parents not having enough money to actually send their children is one of the major obstacles to getting, you know, kids into school again.
Journalist Mac McClelland is my guest. She covers human rights for Mother Jones magazine and wrote the cover story for the January-February issue. It's called Aftershocks. We'll resume our conversation with Mac in a couple of minutes. If you'd like to ask a question, you can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I want to pause here for a couple of minutes. Justin Martin has joined us, afternoon host of All Things Considered. Welcome, Justin. We want to take a moment from this interview, which we know is disturbing but also compelling and important, to ask you to please make a contribution of financial support to this station. We are really glad that we can bring you content like this, even when it's not what any of us would prefer to hear. It's important. The coverage from a journalist like Mac McClelland, who has been there and seen all of this firsthand, is really, we think, invaluable. Mm-hmm. And we also think that that's worth a contribution to keep this station strong. You can go online right now and make your contribution in any amount at kera.org, or you can call 1-888-694-6931. Justin, we have a challenge grant going during Think Today.
Yes, a $1,000 challenge grant from the Wells Fargo Foundation. We need 75 contributions. Is it before the end of Think?
Before the end of Think.
Before the end of Think.
By 2 p.m.
That's a large amount of money. It allows the station to take one step closer to ending the membership campaign, which is a big deal. We want to go back to normal programming. But more than that, we want to pay for programs like this, providing you with compelling information. You, as Chris was saying, you might not want to hear, but it gets the story out there. It allows people to have an idea of what's going on in Haiti, which we think is very important. And your contribution does allow this to happen at 1-888-694-6931. Or you can go online to kera.org. But with this $1,000 challenge grant in play, it'll allow us to end this drive quicker, which is a big deal. 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org. And we should have help and update from Pledge Control Central soon at what level we are.
Oh, we need 72 more contributions, yes.
Which is completely doable.
You know, the great thing about serving you a public radio audience is that you are not looking only for what you want to hear. You're not looking only for something that confirms your point of view. You're looking to understand what the conditions are in this country, in the world, for other human beings. You're looking to understand how people have arrived at their conclusions before you draw your opinion. And that's really exciting to Justin and me as journalists to be able to serve you in that way. And your interest and your curiosity allows us to produce a program like Think, to produce all the other shows that you hear on this station. Your contributions make it possible. You know, we have expenses. Your money really helps us to pay for them. A lot of the programs that come to us, all the programs, I should say, that come to us from the national services and international services come with a cost to KERA that is set according to how many listeners we have, which means we are delighted to have such a large audience, but it also means our annual expenses to pay for these programs is quite high. We would really appreciate your support right now at KERA.org or 1-888-694-6931.
1-888-694-6931 is the number to call, or you can go online to KERA.org. There's a plethora of thank you gifts. If you're interested in coffee mugs or T-shirts or other public radio swag, you can look online or ask the person on the phone. They'll provide you with the details. You can be like, and here's a correction, by the way, James and Delphine Karub in Liviona, Missouri. And a big thank you to Ryan Panel in Flower Mound, Glenn Leatherman and Rebecca Bertino in Fort Worth. All of these people who called in at 1-888-694-6931 or perhaps went online to KERA.org. With this challenge at play, your contribution can go a little bit further. If you have a moment this afternoon, please call 1-888-694-6931 or KERA.org.
Thanks also to Elizabeth Napier in Dallas and Mr. and Mrs. Grant Hodgkins in Fort Worth. Yeah, if you've been waiting until there was something special like a challenge grant, this is the ideal time. If you listen to Think Every Day and you want to support it, this would be great because you whatever your contribution is, be it $100 or $1,000, an additional $1,000 will come to us from the Wells Fargo Foundation if we're able to reach that goal of 75 contributions over the two-hour Think program today. This has been, I think, a very compelling interview thus far with Mac McClelland. You have time right now to get on the phone or to go online to KERA.org and take care of the entire transaction before we get back with Mac in about 3 minutes. So this is really your ideal moment if you're ready to make your contribution and you can help us get closer. Lots of people, Justin, like to wait until we're in the final 10.
Yeah.
But not everybody can wait till we're in the final 10 or else it won't work.
1-888-694-6931. Consider for a moment, not only will you be paying for public radio to support it for the coming years, you'll also be allowing other people to enjoy public radio within the North Texas region. Your contribution is vital to support public radio here in North Texas. 1-888-694-6931 or KERA.org.
You can certainly look at your contribution as a gift to KERA. We look at it that way too, but honestly, it's also an investment, not just in this station and in your own education, but in your community, because you make public radio strong and vibrant here in North Texas. You can go online to KERA.org or call 1-888-694-6931. Again, we have during Think Today the Wells Fargo Foundation Challenge. They will give us an additional $1,000 if we receive 75 contributions in any amount during the 2 hours of Think Today. We would really appreciate your help with making this challenge grant. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is human rights reporter Mac McClelland. Her article in the January-February issue of Mother Jones magazine is called Aftershocks. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. We should point out here, Mac, that there are people in Haiti trying to help themselves and their neighbors, including two really amazing organizations run by rape survivors. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, one of them is, they're acronyms. One of them is called FAVELEC, and the other one is called COFAVIV, and they have both been, as you said, started by women who were raped in the political turmoil in the 90s, and they are huge organizations. They have hundreds of members because that is how many, you know, rape survivors there are who are interested in activism around this issue. And when I was actually in the hospital with that recent rape victim, when I got to Haiti the first time in September, the only reason that she even made it to a hospital was because these women had paid to have somebody pick her up and take her there, because a lot of people who live in tent cities don't have the means, obviously, to get a car and drive to the hospital and then pay doctor's bills and things like that. So these organizations are working incredibly hard, and they try to make themselves available. They do what they do is they have an agent in some of the camps, and that agent does outreach and goes around and talks to people to let people know that she is there and what her phone number is, and that you can call her if you are victimized in some way, and then she will try to get you some help. Unfortunately, they only have agents in about Favelek in particular only has agents in about a dozen camps, and there are more than 1,000 camps. And those agents are volunteers. They are not paid. And they receive a lot of death threats from people who don't like the work that they're doing. And in their budget shortfalls, you know, makes it impossible for them to have any sort of security, and also makes it impossible for them to help people who call sometimes. I mean, I was with them when somebody called and said, you know, she was raped, and when she was raped, she was choked nearly to death, and she'd been threatened by this man. And so, you know, she needed help, and they didn't have the funds at the time to send anybody to assist her.
What is the dynamic like in the room when they get a call like that and they're desperate to help and they have to say, I'm sorry?
Well, I was with one of the drivers, one of the guys who goes and picks people up and drives them around when he was, I mean, and that guy gets phone calls all day from either people who have just been raped, or their daughter has just been raped, or they were raped previously and they're already, you know, sort of under his care, and they don't now, you know, they don't have any food, or they need some sort of medicine and they can't go get it because they don't have any transportation and they don't have the money. So this guy's phone just rings constantly, and it you know, he's pretty tough, and these women are extremely tough. The women of Kof Aviv and Favelek, obviously, I mean, they're incredible survivors, and no matter how many death threats they get, they don't curb their activities at all. But it was starting to wear on him a little bit, just as we're driving around town, because he has to say no to a lot of these requests. Some woman had called and she needed some food. Some other woman had called and she needed some medicine. And he was saying, you know, he turned to me while we were in the car and he said, how am I supposed to decide? I only have enough for one of them.
What's it like for you to go back and sleep at night in a sort of safe, clean hotel? I mean, how do you keep yourself sane when you're flip-flopping back and forth from these two realities?
I actually, you know, I get more of the culture shock when I get back to the States, actually. You know, I just got here the other day and I'm walking down the streets of San Francisco and I'm like, everything is so clean and ordered and nonviolent and strange. But, you know, that's just sort of the same sort of dissonance you have with any kind of third world space. The first time that I was in Haiti in September, I was alone, actually. And as a, you know, 30-year-old woman by myself, I actually ended up in a couple of situations where I personally was threatened as well. And so going back to my hotel room did not feel clean or safe in any way. It had sort of, you know, what I was covering had sort of ended up permeating what I was doing. And that was, it was incredibly hard. It took me a long time to sort of get back on track after I got back. And it just, you know, makes you empathize all the more with people who cannot escape that. I mean, I got to leave, right? So to be a woman sleeping alone under a tarp, not even in a, you know, in a hotel room, you can't even imagine the sort of fear that must invoke in someone.
Yeah, the thought of that fear is really interesting to me, and I wonder what it took for you to sort of steel yourself to return again.
Whiskey. I brought a photographer this time, so I was not by myself, and that was incredibly helpful. So having, you know, someone else around so that I would not be put in the same sort of threatening situations as I had been last time was incredibly helpful. But also, you know, like I said, I'm just a visitor. This is a short period of time that I have to be there. You can't really complain about what it's like to have to endure, you know, that sort of fear if you do end up internalizing it when, you know, people have to live like that for a really long time. And, you know, Haitians are a lot tougher than I am, obviously. So I had some time in between to sort of recover from it a little bit and get ready to go back. And, you know, I knew what I was getting into. And so I just sort of barreled through and it worked out okay.
So it's been more than a year since the earthquake. How long do most Haitians who were made homeless by this natural disaster, how long do they expect to be living this way?
Forever.
Really?
When you talk to, yeah, at this point, when you talk to people in the tents and you say, how long are you going to be living here for? They say, I don't know, forever. Because they just can't imagine that anyone is going to clear all the rubble, which is still all, you know, all over the streets. And in addition to clearing the rubble, building something on top of it where that used to be, and then, you know, providing a place for someone to live. And in order to pay rent, you'd have to have a job. So somebody would have to create jobs. There's so little faith in the government. I mean, Haitians, you always hear Haitians say, we have no government. There is no government. We have no government is sort of like the tagline, which at this point is true.
Yeah.
So there's some hope that with these new elections, a new government, a capable government, will come into power and change things. But until there are wheels in motion and that actually starts happening, you know, the guy, for example, that I was telling you, you know, shows porn in a, you know, makeshift theater in the tent city, I asked him, you know, when do you think you're going to move? Because I always ask people that. When do you think you're going to be able to move? And they just shake their head at you, you know, like you have asked a ridiculous question. And in fact, he's so convinced that he's going to be in that exact space for a long time that he was making new investments in his business. So he was gonna, you know, either try to earn or take out some money to buy speakers for the TV, because it's a very small TV and so the volume doesn't go up loud enough. So he, rather than, you know, having hopes for getting out, he, because, you know, he feels dug in and feels sort of trapped there, he's trying to grow his business as a person, as a resident of a tent city.
Where can we Americans safely invest or donate our money if we want to try and do something?
Well, there are a lot of, I mean, as we said, there's, you know, there's 10,000 NGOs there. You can't not find a place to give money to Haiti personally, because, you know, it's an issue that I think has been ignored. Favelec and Cope Aviv, I think, are both very good organizations, the organizations that deal with sexual violence, because they actually were founded by, and they still are run by, Haitians.
Yeah.
And there's a legal group that works with them, which is based in, I think it's based in California actually now, but it's called IJDH, which is the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. And they work with them, and their website is IJDH.org. And they try to provide legal assistance to these women who are hoping that someday there will be, you know, something in place to actually prosecute these rapes and bring the numbers and the incidents down. But at the if you go to motherjones.com, where this feature is, or in the magazine, we have a list of the websites for those organizations and a few others that have been doing great work.
Well, Mac, it's a really important story. Thank you so much for following it so diligently and for spending this hour with us.
It's my pleasure.
Mac McClelland is human rights reporter for Mother Jones magazine. You can read her cover story on the situation in Haiti in the January-February issue of the magazine. We really want to appreciate all of you who have been with us, who have been listening throughout this hour. We are especially grateful to those of you who have made contributions of financial support to KERA to allow us to bring you, really, on this show, every subject under the sun, pretty much, except we don't do a lot of major league sports, but that may be the one exception. Your contribution makes it possible at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931. For the next hour and 6 minutes or so, your contribution also makes it possible, not guarantees, but makes it possible that we can get a $1,000 additional gift as a challenge grant from the Wells Fargo Foundation. They said if during Think Today we could get 75 separate contributions in any amount, they would give the station an extra $1,000.
1-888-694-6931 is the number to call. That's a large amount of money, a significant number off of the total goal we're looking for in this membership campaign. Hey, we could go back to programming quicker, and that's what you want. And you know, but more important than all of that, in all seriousness, it pays for the programming here on KERA. It allows you to hear Think uninterrupted. It allows you to hear the President's State of the Union later this evening without any kind of interruption whatsoever. And it also gives you the comprehensive, fleshed-out programming that you've relied on for about 37 years on here on KERA 90.1. So your contribution does make it happen at 1-888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org.
64 contributions left to go. That's about a contribution a minute for the remainder of Think until 2 o'clock today. It certainly is possible. I was going to say, and important. You know, important international news is sometimes difficult to listen to. You know, this story is disturbing for any human being with a heart, but it's always important. We recognize that. And we are not here to deliver only what we think you want to hear. We're not here only to make you crazy. We're here to explore the realities of our world today. And sometimes on this show, it's something light and fun. Sometimes it's a social science topic. Sometimes it's a physical science topic. Sometimes it's a political story. And sometimes it is a human rights issue that all of us have an interest in because this is about our fellow human beings. Your contributions to this station, particularly during the hours that Think is on, act like a vote in support of this program, in support of this kind of content, in support of the reality that we make this show for you here in North Texas. This is not a national show. This is a show that is programmed for you by people who all live and work and are passionate about the community here in North Texas. Your support at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931 makes you part of the team that makes KERA possible.
There is the $1,000 challenge grant in play from the Wells Fargo Foundation. A big thank you to Thelma Swindle in Fort Worth, Reeve Skutnicki in Dallas, Jerry Grisaff also in Dallas, Alicia Melvin in Allen. All of you who've called so far, 1-888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org. Know that your contribution is going to keep public radio on the air and allow us to continue bringing the programming that you've relied on over the years. 1-888-694-6931, online at KERA.org.
Thanks so much, Tara Barber in Red Oak and Lisa Owen in Dallas. Thank you to Margaret Guy in Dallas and John Thomas in Plano. We would love to be able to read your name, and you do have a choice on that, by the way. If you don't want us to read your name, there's a little box that you can check when you fill this out online, or the folks on the phone will ask you. But it's nice for us to be able to say thank you. We hope that you know that your contribution is appreciated by listening to the station, because it's there for you every day. When you say, okay, I'm going to do $120, you tune in every day to the station, perhaps for hours on end, and you think, that's my money. My money made that possible. I made KERA possible. Taking ownership of this station is an important step in making sure that it stays strong and vibrant. Your contribution now to KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931 represents that step.
Consider for a moment how long KERA 90.1 has served as your audio oasis on the radio dial. You can tune to the station, get clear, concise information about whatever you're interested in, whether it's what's going on traffic-wise, what's going down in Austin, what's happening in Fort Worth. You can tune to KERA 90.1, and it will provide you with an understanding that you're not going to get on any other station, and it's your contributions that, as Chris is saying, that has kept that strong. 1-888-694-6931 is the number to call. It only takes a couple of minutes. You can look at some thank you gifts. You can ask some questions about that, or you can go online to KERA.org.
Thank you, Adrian Rosenberg in Dallas and Rajani Kandarpa in Louisville. Thank you, Marty Rendell in Dallas, Alan Lake in Fort Worth. Thanks so much to Mark and Diane Day in Van Alstine and Andrea and Jay Davis in Dallas. You guys are our heroes.
1-888-694-6931. So many names. Lynn Walters in Dallas, Angela Nichols in Denton, Scott Cassingham in Plano, Jan Grab in Colleyville, and Matt Drotz in, hey, Haltom City. 1-888-694-6931. We have the $1,000 challenge grant in play from the Wells Fargo Foundation. 75 contributions before the end of Think, and they'll see to it that KERA gets an additional $1,000, a large amount of money, a significant step closer to finishing this membership campaign, which is what everybody once. So if you have a few minutes, please consider calling 1-888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org.
This is a matter of really deciding to support KERA simply because it is something that you believe in. We cannot find you and seek you out in your car and flip off your radio if you have not been making a contribution. We know that. The reality is we're set up this way in part to serve people who absolutely could not afford to make a contribution. But those of us who can't afford to, we all sort of assume that we'll chip in. Now you may decide what you can chip in for this year is $20. You may decide you can do your normal gift of $250 or $365 or whatever it might be. You might be a Friends member at the $1,500 level. The amount that your budget will allow is your business, but we do ask that you make a contribution in any amount now. You can go online to kera.org or you can call 1-888-694-6931. Help us, please, within the next hour to get a total of 75 contributions. That will allow us to receive from the Wells Fargo Foundation a challenge grant in the amount of $1,000. That's a big amount of money around here. Goes a long way toward the programming that you love. You can make it happen now at kera.org. Thanks.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.